in Randolph County and from us around. Everybody loves that smooth sound. Radio Ransparta means WHCO.
Car folks on the go, it's 1230.
That's WHBO.
We love to have you with us. We want you all to know you're welcome on WHCO. Randolph County Radio.
From Rio Country, 1230 and 97.3 WHCO. Time now for the People Speak program. We're taking your calls at 443-2121 or toll-free 877-443-1230. Now, the People Speak.
Good morning. This is The People Speak. I'm Jeff, and today we're going to be talking with Randolph County Commissioner David Holder. We'll take a break here, and we'll come back and talk with Commissioner Holder here this morning. You're listening to The People Speak on Rural Country 1230 and 97.3 WHCO. And welcome back again, The People Speak. Today we're talking with Randolph County Commissioner David Holder. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Jeff. It's always nice to have a chance to come here and say a few words. And by the way, I apologize for being late. I was at a doctor's appointment and it ran over a little bit, and sometimes it does that. But I made it here, past the first break, and have a chance to say a few words and answer any questions should there be any. I guess first item to mention is we had a meeting Friday. We have our meetings every other Friday morning. And at the point in time, we announced Friday that the real estate tax bills, they have been printed. And they were stuffing them in envelopes, and they will go out in the mail today and tomorrow and probably Wednesday. It's a pretty large mailing, so it happens over a 2-3 day period of time. So most people should be receiving their real estate tax bills sometime late this week. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have the opportunity to see those. And if I remember correctly, so don't quote me on this, but if I remember correctly, the due dates were November 21st and December 18th, maybe, were the two due dates, if I'm not mistaken. But in that ballpark, I don't have it printed in front of me, but the next time I'm in, I'll mention those completely. And, of course, that'll also be mentioned in the newspapers this week. We announced that Friday and published it. I just don't remember the exact dates off the top of my head. But those are out now, and so we'll have the opportunity for those. And I know, I always look forward to getting mine every year, but it's been a while, so Carolyn and I have the money set aside to pay them, so we're ready for that.
That's what I've learned over the years. You know, you put a little bit, you know it's coming.
You know so. It's coming. That is true.
Kind of talking taxes as well, one of the big things right now is this proposed progressive tax.
Yes, I'll mention a little bit on that. I'll give a bit of a history lesson on that. It's the proposed amendment to the Constitution of the State of Illinois that allows for progressive income tax. If you look on your history a little bit, and I'm actually old enough where I remember quite a bit of this, there was a constitutional convention for the State of Illinois back in 1968. And they rewrote a number of the articles of the Illinois Constitution, and one of those was to allow for a state income tax. Before 1969, there was no state income tax, and there was no state lottery either. And those were two particular things that came out of that constitutional changes of 1968, was the beginning of the Illinois State Lottery and the beginning of the Illinois income tax, which started actually July 1st, of 1969. Now, on my early days as a certified public accountant when I was working in Carbondale, I filled out a lot of Schedule Fs related to Illinois taxes, prorating taxes between revenues earned before July 1st, 1969, and revenues earned after July 1st, 1969. Now, that's not done much anymore because there's, I mean, after 50 years, there's very little of that left anymore. But in the Constitutional Convention, when they had it, they set it up as a flat income tax, and they had a reason for doing that. If you look at your history of the United States has a progressive income tax. And at that particular time in the late 60s and early 70s, the United States progressive income tax rates were up in the 80%, 85% range. That means if a person made an extra $100, they would pay $85 of federal income tax. They were the federal rates. There were at that time, I think, 15 different brackets and some outlandish rates. And the framers of the Constitutional Convention for Illinois in 1968 were very much aware of that, and they did not want to see that take place in the state of Illinois. And that's why they wrote a flat tax in. If we're going to have a state income tax, it's going to be a flat rate, which many people consider to be the most fair tax system going. Everyone pays at the same rate. Excuse me. And so that was the logic behind what they did. Then in 1980, along came Ronald Reagan, and of course I was very much in the, you know, in income taxes at that time as an adult and married and preparing many taxes. And they changed first, they flattened out many of the federal brackets, and then they had another federal rewrite of tax laws. If you look at the federal rewrites, many of the federal changes took effect of 1-1 of 1987, and that's when they introduced just two flat brackets for the United States in that time period. And Illinois was very happy with their 3% rate, and that went along very well. Of course, that since that time, there's been many tinkerings with the federal income tax, and they've added brackets and taken brackets out. But that was the logic behind why we had a flat tax in the state of Illinois. We didn't want to get into the situation that the federal government had had for many years with so many multiple brackets. The trouble with the amendment that they're offering to the Constitution right now, this is the one where you see the vote no and vote yes on it, mm-hmm. is this will basically allow a blank check to the governor of the state of Illinois. There is no limits on how many brackets there can be. There's no limits on what those brackets can be or how much they can be charged or what it can be. And although they say they advertise, you know, that most people's taxes won't go up, and there's some truth to that because roughly half the people in the state of Illinois don't pay state income tax anyway. You don't tax people who don't work. You don't tax retirement pay. Basically, you only tax interest, dividends, and wages. Mm-hmm. And, of course, with interest rates near record lows, I mean, not too many people are worried about paying tax on interest right now. So, basically, most of the state income tax is actually collected on wages worked. That's where it's from. And although they say that won't change for most people, back in 1968, they said once we have a state income tax of 3%, we'll have all the funding we're ever going to need, and that won't be necessary to change. And where we see where we're at 50 years later, and they're, you know, we're in record deficit territory. So it did change. They said it wouldn't, but it did. And I wouldn't be so much opposed. I am, by the way, I do not support the amendment, but it's not because of the moving from a flat tax to a progressive, but it's because there is no checks in there as to what those rates can be or how high they can climb. If it had an amendment that said we'll have a progressive tax, but only four possible rates or three possible rates or one rate can't be higher than another rate or something of that nature, what they really need to do is put something in there that says, you know, for every increase in taxes, we will guarantee decreases in spending or no new programs or ways to reduce spending. Because ultimately, if the state of Illinois is going to, you know, get back on the steady financial track, they're going to have to find ways to reduce spending. You can't raise taxes to cover anything you can possibly spend. It's kind of like, us as individuals. Us as individuals have to control our spending. We'll never make enough money to be able to buy anything we can imagine we want, but rather we have to learn to prioritize, and the state needs to do those things. And if those safeguards were built into it, I would be more supportive of it. what they advertise, that, you know, the state of Illinois is behind the times, other states have this, and we're old-fashioned. That's not true at all. Other states do have it, but it's not that we're old-fashioned. I would argue it's just the opposite. We were probably more progressive in the early days in looking at these as issues than has been taking place. But until we can define some checks and balances and safeguards for it, I don't think it's a good idea at this point in time to give the governor. And you see lots of signs praising his name around town. And to give him a blank check to do whatever he wants to do. I just don't see where that's fiscally responsible at all. Exactly. And you can label it fair all you want, but that's not my definition of fair. That's my two cents on it, but as a tax professional, and I have been for over 35 years, I do have quite a bit of knowledge on these types of issues.
Right. You were mentioning the changing in that as far as several years ago, whenever it went from 3.75% up to 4.95%.
Yes, and that does bring up one other interesting point. Most people probably don't know this, but on the base income tax rate, which was 3% for many, many years, 0.5% of that 3, in other words, 2.5% is to the state of Illinois, 0.5% is returned to the local governments, i.e. like as prorated to the city of Sparta, prorated to Randolph County, prorated to road districts, etc., based on population is the proration as to how that works. And that's another part about this. There's no guarantee or prorations at all spelled out in this to benefit local governments who may need more money at this point in time due to the COVID. It just simply goes to the state of Illinois to literally be distributed however the governor and his staff sees fit. And that's to me, that's not good fiscal responsibility. But that's my thoughts on it, and we'll see how the election comes out on it in a couple of weeks.
Exactly. I'll tell you what, we got another break. Let's go ahead and take that. We'll come back and talk some more with Randolph County Commissioner David Holder here on The People Speak. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back. Again, talking today with Randolph County Commissioner David Holder. And, December 1st, we'll start the new budget year.
December 1st is our new fiscal year. And so we're in the process now of, we've had our budget hearings to discuss with all the different elected officials and appointed officials of Randolph County what they project their needs to be, and we're in the process of assembling that into the budget, which, as you mentioned, will begin on December 1st. And really, that's only about 6 weeks, no more than 6 weeks away now, so that's closing in on us fast. And there is a lot that has to be considered in the process as we're doing that. Many different considerations go into it other than salaries, which are a part of it. We have to look at what types of equipment we project we're going to need over the next year, the cost of any repairs we're going to have. In this particular year, we're going to have to obtain a new accounting system because the accounting system, computerized system that the courthouse uses is going to be discontinued, I believe, sometime around the middle or late of 21. So we're going to have to be looking at moving towards that, to what types of data processing and computer systems it'll be needed, what it's going to cost for oil and gas for the sheriff's office. I mean, get into many, many details that have to be considered. We have to project revenues as we think they're going to be. And that has been difficult lately, obviously, with the COVID, and that changes the amount of, state income tax we receive, changes the amount of state sales tax. Changes sales tax drastically in the area because you have, places closed. Project real estate taxes going into the future, which is now made extremely difficult because the announced future closing of Baldwin Power Station there, but with Vistra. So that is going to be a difficulty we're going to have to work through. So there are many different things being considered, future road projections. And while I'm mentioning that, we have one major bridge project going on in Randolph County. I don't believe the second project is going to get started in this year. It's probably going to start in early 21, right after you get through the spring thaws and it dries up enough to work. But this bridge is on County Road 5. You've probably heard me mention it, about a mile and a half north of Rockwood are about 5 miles south of Wine Hill. It's the bridge over Little Mill Creek. The road's been closed through there now about 4 weeks, and I think we're into it. The project is on schedule. I think it has about 2 weeks or possibly three to continue if the weather holds out. The new bridge is in place. They're pouring the aprons on the ends. I have to resurface across it with blacktop and the areas, and I have to put the exterior, you know, banisters and safety supports on it and those things. But it is moving along, and I would project roughly 3 weeks from the day it should be open. Now, that's just a rough projection. I'll know more. When I come in here at the next People Speak, we'll probably be getting down to the exact days. That's always contingent because of the weather. You don't know what's going to happen there.
True.
But road projects are out there that we have to take a look at and have to assemble all that into a projected budget and make sure that we can finance it, which has been difficult, obviously, through the years, through this year with the unique situations we've had. But I head that area up in the budget operations, and that'll be one of the things that I'm working on, is one of the things I'm working on, as well as other considerations that need to be taking place.
Right. So, yeah, this time of year, kind of road work becomes sporadic as the weather allows.
Road work does become sporadic. We don't want to have any major projects that we have to carry through the winter. Mm-hmm. We try to start them in sufficient time that we can have them wrapped before major winter hits, which usually you can think of major winter as about the 1st of December. Once that hits, you really can't count on the weather anymore. So when I say 3 more weeks, that puts you into the first part of November, and you need to be wrapping up at that point in time. And that is our plans. Most of the mowing is finished on roads, and at this point in time, or will be before long, and you know, it's not that far off. We'll be talking about snow 6 to 8 weeks, and here it comes again in the wintertime, and it's out there and moving towards us. So I begin to prepare for those types of things in a new fiscal year.
Exactly, exactly. And I guess, you know, it's still up in the air as far as this COVID and everything, how next year is going to pan out.
Yeah, it is in many ways. I worked very closely with the director of our Randolph County Health Department, and I read her reports every day as to how many there is. I noticed, by the way, changing subjects, I noticed we are back on an uptick. There has been quite a few new cases in the last 4 or 5 days, which is pushing us back into the orange area, which was discussed at the board meeting on Friday, last Friday. And we'll be coming out in the papers this week and discussions of that. I hope we don't run into these types of situations where we have to look at more closures. Mm. And I'm just not sure how much longer we can continue this pandemic. How's a good way of saying it? You know, this pandemic area that we're in, and before it becomes, you know, to an area to where it's just not really sustainable anymore. Mm. And hopefully, and I know there are vaccines out there now that you hear discussed on the news that should be available in the next month or so. And hopefully once we get past the first of the year, we'll start getting this COVID pandemic behind us and in the rearview mirror with some vaccines, and we won't have the situation. But obviously, I don't know that for sure. I'm not a medical professional. I'm a financial professional, but that is my hope. And from what I hear, that it'll move that away, because, you know, obviously we can't continue to keep things closed indefinitely. At some point in time, you have to look at what else you're going to do, not only in dealing with government, but and for all the small businesses out there that suffer from it. And there are many.
Like restaurants, for example, I mean, they've been able to, during the summer months and stuff, offer outdoor dining, but obviously when we come into December, January, that's not
much of an option. Outdoor dining is not much of an option in, you know, mid-November, December, January. You have to have other alternatives, and you have to keep these places in operation.
That's
so hope. Hopefully we're not going to have the situations that we've had in the past.
That's what I'm looking at. You know, IHSA had projected, you know, starting high school football in February. And I'm thinking, boy, that, you know, sitting out on the bleachers at the football field in the middle of February is
or even the football field that's going to be dry enough to play in.
It's
going to be interesting to see how that actually works. Obviously, we want to hope for the best, but I have my doubts as to how they're going to be able to pull some of this off. Now, maybe by the time you get into April, it's a little different story, but you run into a little drier weather. But I've seen many springs where you don't have much more than mud and slop up until the middle of April, and if we happen to catch one of those in 21, then it's going to be very difficult for some of those things.
Exactly. So it's just, I guess, it's a day-by-day thing.
Day-by-day thing. That's exactly what it is. It's very difficult to plan through. We do the best we can with it, but it's difficult to plan through.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time, but...
Other subjects, National Park, National Monument status for the Prairie du Rocher area has been presented to Congressman Bost. He is attempting to get that presented to National Park Service, and I haven't seen anything recently on it, and recently being the last 2 weeks, but I know it's out there and moving forward, and we're very hopeful for that. That is something that's very important. Still working with the Enterprise Zone. I haven't talked much about that over the last several months, but that is still out there and going, and maybe one of our segments I'll devote quite a bit of to that, because there has been some changes involved in Enterprise Zone. And also the four-lane initiative, there were some changes involved in that, and perhaps we can bring some of that in future times. But those are their own subject matters.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us this morning.
That's quite all right. I always enjoy a chance to come here and say a few words, and it's nice to be here, Jeff.
All right. Glad to have you. And that'll wrap things up for the People Speak. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day.